Chapter 23. Draco knows the moment Harry crosses his threshold, can feel it in the loosening of his spine, and how it suddenly becomes a little easier to breathe, in how the manor seems to settle around him, starts to exude the feel of home. He gets up from where he's sitting on the edge of his perfectly made bed, strides over to the door, then thinks better of it. He's just sat back down when his bedroom door opens and there's Harry. He has dark circles under his eyes, and it looks like he hasn't slept properly in days. A tinge of worry fizzes through Draco. Has he done this to him? Added, with his decisions, to the weight the man already carries? Still, beneath the exhaustion, there's something soft and beautiful, and so real it almost hurts to look at him. He takes a step towards Draco, hand going up in his direction. Then he stops, eyes raking over Draco's face, following the lines of his scars. Harry's open hand clenches into a fist and returns to his side. "Harry," says Draco, his whole body involuntarily leaning in the man's direction. It takes all his self-control not to rise, to rush to him, to take him in his arms. He licks his lips, rubs his palms over the green velvet of his bed cover. "I didn't think..." That's a lie. Of course, Draco knew he'd come. Was there ever a request for rescue Harry didn't respond to? Draco opens his mouth to say, "You feel guilty over the scars? The clean-up? I know how you can make up for it. But if he says that, he will be pressing into Harry's rawest places. And would they survive it? Such blatant manipulation?" So instead, he takes a breath and tries to be direct. "I need you to go before the Wizengamot," he says, clearing his throat. "Convince them to reintegrate Slytherins into society." "I can't do that," says Harry. Draco scoffs. He didn't even pause to think. Didn't even hesitate. "Actually, you're the only person who can. After this morning's article, they won't listen to me." Draco looks down at the velvet bed cover and notices the red scratches from the bush lining the pale skin of his hands. He slides them under his thighs in an attempt to hide them from his own sight as much as Harry's. "But you are so fundamentally good that any idea you bring before the Wizengamot will automatically be deemed irreproachable." Draco can feel his face twist in disgusted disappointment. He tries to smooth his features, but it's too late, Harry's already noticed. Shutting the door behind himself, Harry crosses the room to kneel at Draco's feet. He reaches up, caressing his cheek. Draco sighs, closing his eyes. Harry's fingers are warm and soft. Unable to help himself, he turns his face into the touch, pressing his lips into Harry's palm without kissing it. "This," he thinks, pressing in just a little more, "this is everything I need." "Draco," Harry breathes, and something in the simple clarity of the sound makes Draco lose it. He wraps his fingers around Harry's wrist, tugs. Harry comes easily, gets to his feet, and climbs onto Draco's lap. Draco's hands grip Harry's waist, and he pulls him closer, burying his face in his neck and breathing in. In. It's overwhelming. If only he can drown himself in this. In Harry, he'll never have to face the world again. Face himself reflected in it. Goodness, he's barely blinked. And poof, his perfectly sterilized life's become a disaster. Harry pushes Draco's hair back, peppers his forehead with kisses. Draco quivers under the onslaught of touch, of feeling. He doesn't know what to do with all these emotions. Harry cascades his fingers through Draco's hair over and over again, trying to soothe him, and it's having the very opposite effect. Draco's grip tightens, his attempt to get Harry closer, even closer, more desperate. "I'm here," Harry whispers through it all. "I'm with you." Rubbing his hands over Draco's neck, his back, his shoulders. It's not sexual at all, it's grounding. As though Harry is trying, with the weight of his body, the force of his touch, to to bring Draco back into reality, remind him that he is made of matter, remind him he exists. "I'm here," Harry rasps, and Draco nods, unable to say anything, do anything. He knows he needs to push Harry away, knows he shouldn't have reached for him in the first place. But he's already holding him. So he lets himself stay that way for a few more seconds, anchored by Harry. Finally, Draco gathers what's left of his strength and pushes him off. Harry goes without protest, but in the last minute surges forward once more and presses his nose into Draco's cheek before slowly, unwillingly, pulling himself back and away, falling back onto the bed and closing his eyes. Draco watches him for a long moment, studying his features, the unhappy curl of his lips, the angular jut of his nose, the thick line of shadow in the hollows of his cheeks, the ashy streaks of his lashes. Unable to look anymore, Draco lies down too and tells Harry about events of the past few days, finding Blaze, the Reconciliation Committee, the support he's managed to gather so far. Then he goes on to tell him about Ron's article in the Daily Prophet, his meeting with Warbeck, and the bill the DMLE is about to pass. "You have to take over from me. This is so important. I can't, Draco. I can't do it. I can't return to the place that damaged me so completely. It took me too much strength to leave. I can't go back. But you can fix this. Write the article. If the wizarding world sees even a slither of what I see, they'll believe in you. I promise." "Me?" snorts Draco. "A creature of darkness? Ask the wizarding world to follow me into the light? It's laughable." Harry throws his arm over his face, shielding his eyes. "Why not? What are you afraid of?" Isn't this the same thing as it was with Voldemort? It wasn't supposed to be. I was supposed to work behind the scenes until slowly, but surely peace was achieved. And now I need to bare myself before the world in order to simply take the first step. Taking the mark was like splitting myself open, showing him my innards, like letting him work his fingers through my guts. But then, what was there for him to see? A little boy with his petty jealousies and little dreams. Draco stands up and begins pacing the room. "Now, though, this article that she wants me to write, Merlin, I'm supposed to expose myself to the world and say, have at me. Examine my darkness, scrutinize it in the light. What will be left of me when it's done? What part of me will still be mine? How much more of my soul must I leave at the feet of others, trying to bargain for my loved ones?" "You can do nothing," says Harry with an apathetic shrug, getting up off the bed and coming to stand beside Draco. "This new bill won't affect your life at all." Draco rounds on him. "You think I should do nothing? You think that's the man I should be?" Harry straightens, eyes flashing with anger. "It sounds to me like that's what you want to hear," he sneers. "A reason, an excuse to be a coward." "I am not a coward," snarls Draco, crowding in on Harry. "Then fucking act like it," he shoves Draco back with so much force that Draco stumbles. "You get to choose what you live for. You can live for something important, or you can live for yourself. Who's going to judge you? No one. No one will even know. But remember this." Harry digs his finger into Draco's chest. "You will know. You will be your own judge, jury, and executioner. And there, in the thick of life's greatest pleasures, your soul will fucking cry out in anguish because you've existed for nothing, and knowing that, will tear you apart." "So easy for you to say," snaps Draco. "You were born good. You don't need to claw your way into the light." Something terribly hurt rips its way across Harry's features, and Draco can feel his stomach sink. He's gone too far. He's broken it, this thing that they have. Harry will leave now, for good. He'll leave, and he'll never forgive him. He'll never. Instead, Harry stills, softens, gets on his toes, brushes Draco's hair away from his eyes. You were born good too, my love, he whispers. We all were. What did you tell me? You said that we all stumble sometimes. The question isn't what you have done in the past. The question is, what will you do in the future? You're a good man, a strong man, a brave one. I am in awe of you. All of you, the good parts and the bad. This committee thing, it matters to you. Is this article really such a huge sacrifice if it gets the job done? It's the same story all over. I have to do it, I have to sacrifice. But who the hell died and made me the martyr? And why do you think you're standing here? You did the very same thing. You sacrificed your fucking life to save the wizarding world, and it was the right thing to do. But who in the end is here to save you? No one. You were alone and drunk out of your mind that night I found you on Dagon Alley, and had I been even half the Wizard Weasley's article says I am, you'd be dead now. Dead. Because that night, it was this easy. Draco snaps his fingers in Harry's face. So who were all your sacrifices for? What did they get you? Draco, what did they get you? Nothing. They got you nothing. How would I live with myself if I hadn't done it? Harry asks quietly. Quite right. So you either kill yourself by doing it, or kill yourself by not doing it. Either way, you're dead. Look, morality doesn't exist, right? Harry says, refusing to let Draco win. It's constructed by us. By people. You could have left your parents with Voldemort. You could have stayed. You could have served him better. Or worse. Each of these choices come with their own checks and balances. In each, you gain one thing and lose another. But what is constant in all of it is your ability to choose. You make a choice, as you like to say, and you stand by it. You can leave England and forget this idea altogether. You can publish the article or decide to become the next Dark Lord. Maybe they're right, maybe everything is permitted, but everything has a price. You make the choice by deciding what price you're willing to pay. Draco rubs at his face. Please look, just do this one thing for me. Ask them. The bedroom door slams open, making them both jump. They draw their wands before they've managed to properly turn towards it. But it's only Blaze, who raises a disinterested eyebrow at their wands before looking carefully between Harry and Draco, then glancing at the still-made bed, eyebrow rising even higher. Let's go, Blaze says to Draco. I need you to help me with something. Then he looks over to Harry, purses his lips. You can come too. He nods, as though he's made a decision, and strides from the doorway. Come along then. What the fuck? Breathes Harry, staring at the space Blaze had just occupied, before turning to Draco. What's wrong with him? Draco rolls his eyes. Blaze, he says, as though that explained everything. You don't need to come. He probably wants my opinion on furniture for his room or some such rot. I have opinions on furniture, says Harry with an indignant wave of his hand. I'm sure you do, Draco smirks. Harry is adorable, fists on hips, features set in a stubborn frown. Draco smiles, opens his mouth to say something else, but Harry narrows his eyes, as though daring him to say anything. With a chuckle, Draco grabs his cloak and leads Harry from the room. Zabini Manor, what's left of it, is an enormous, jagged structure, hunched and forlorn, standing on a field of dried barley, framed by the heavy grey of the sky. Its soot-licked stone wall is crumbling. One side of the building has collapsed in on itself completely. There isn't even a hint of a roof. Most of the windows are missing, though here and there Draco can see shattered splinters of stained glass reflecting the grey of the sky. The crippled manor is a painful sight, even if Draco had never seen it in its former glory. Now, though, it's become a hollowed-out husk of what used to be his friend's home. How can you stand to look at it? Asks Draco without thinking. Blaze doesn't respond, but his lips thin and his back straightens. Draco's mind can't seem to help itself. It keeps filling in the blanks. He mentally washes the stonework till it is gleaming and white, lets it overgrow with imported western ivy, which had bloomed a violent orange and fuchsia in the summer months. He superimposes a bright green tiled roof with its sinuous torrents and spires onto the aching gapes, then completes the stained glass windows which had wrapped around the second floor. The imagery in the stained glass had once told the story of Zabini the Horrible, who had defended these very lands from French invasion and was given lordship over them by the Mughal king of the time. The wind rises, and even now, all these years later, it brings with it a faint smell of burning. Draco shivers, the room of requirement, crackling and red, echoes through his memory. Greg, he thinks involuntarily, then thinks, I couldn't save him. And a moment later, there was nothing to save. And after that, he thinks of Pansy. Of course, and always Pansy. Draco doesn't want to know what it must have been like for Blaze's parents, trapped inside those walls with nowhere to run. He hopes it was quick. Wishes that he didn't need to be standing here, hoping. Beside him, Harry sways on his feet. He looks decidedly green. Blaze must notice because he says, Stop it, Potter. This isn't about you. Why are we here? Asks Harry. He's breathing through his mouth, eyes fixed firmly on the ground. You'll see. Come on, Blaze says, voice gruff. And the three of them set out through the clawing, grasping barley, which snags on their cloaks and their skin, as though trying to hold them back. When they reach what used to be the entrance of the manor, Blaze stops and turns to face them. Why did you stop? Asks Draco. I can't get in, Blaze replies. Draco frowns. Wards? He asks. Blaze nods. Of a sort. The magic's raw, strong, but every time I undo a part of it, another part snaps closed. Hopefully, between the three of us. Harry finally looks up at the manor. He licks his lips, shuffling uncomfortably from one foot to the other, then says, Do you really want to go in there? We don't know what we'll find. I have to, Blaze says to Harry. If I don't, it'll just stay there, like this black hole in the middle of England, the one place I can't go. Draco nods, and to his surprise, so does Harry. I suppose we all have places like that, says Harry by way of explanation. What could have put these here? Draco asks, tapping a finger against the wards. They're not Zabini work. No, says Blaze, they're not. Left behind by the Aurors, maybe? He doesn't address the question to Harry, but Harry shakes his head anyway. They're too simple for that. They're strong, but they're not, you know, complex. It takes the three of them an hour and a half to pull the wards down enough for them to be able to get in. The inside of the manor is no better than the outside. Most of it is burnt, but here and there Draco sees a slither of tapestry or the leg of a chair. A suit of armor lying in a corner is almost entirely intact. The smell of burning is far stronger. Draco wants to say something, but can't think of anything to say. Can't decide if Blaze wants to be distracted or left alone. Afraid to do the wrong thing, and at the same time afraid to ask. They move through the building, and Draco tries not to picture himself and Blaze as little boys. How they'd play in these once splendid corridors, then gossip, then get drunk, then finally fight. They hadn't supported him. Blaze and Pansy, when he joined Voldemort, told him it was the stupidest thing he'd ever done, told him it would get him killed. Funny that. Abruptly, Harry freezes, raising a finger to his mouth and drawing his wand. Nice having an ex-Aura with you, at a time like this, Draco thinks, drawing his own wand. Harry motions them forward and they follow him, watching their steps, careful to remain quiet, down the rest of the corridor, and out into what had once been the ballroom, where Blaze and Draco had gotten drunk for the first time as boys. Draco points to an arrangement of half-salvaged furniture pushed into a corner. Nothing that would have belonged to the room, Draco doesn't think, but rather dragged there by someone, or something long after the fire had died. A stupid little part of him wonders if Blaze's parents could have survived and been hiding out in here, waiting to be found. And then he sees it. A person huddled in a corner. Hope, overwhelming and heady, floods his entire body. "You're all right," Draco calls without thinking. "You're safe. We won't hurt you." "Draco," snaps Harry, "stay back." But it's too late. Draco is already striding across the room towards the figure. It's a woman, he realizes, squinting in the half-light. "Lumos," Draco whispers, raising his wand. "You're safe," he says again. "We won't hurt you, I promise." The woman is lovely, fair-skinned and dark-haired, with sharp cheekbones and sunken cheeks, staring at Draco with unblinking, icy blue eyes. "Draco," says Harry, taking him by the wrist, but Draco pulls himself free. "You're safe." Her knees are up, her robes are open. "Who are you?" asks Draco. "What are you doing here?" Her robes are open, exposing sunken breasts, and in her arms, hidden by the crook of her knees, is an open-mouthed baby wrapped in singed red velvet. The baby's skin is blue. Draco stops, stares. "Draco," Harry says again. The woman still hasn't blinked. "Draco, turn away," or moved. "Draco, please, you need to turn away," or breathed. "What?" asks Draco stupidly. "Locked in a stasis charm," he half hears Blaze reply. "No way to tell how long they've been." "Dead," Draco realizes. The woman and her baby are dead. Draco licks his lips, blinks, tries to stay upright. His ears are ringing, sparks are dancing before his eyes. Someone takes him under the arm, tries to turn him around, but he shrugs them off himself, pulls and tugs, and then he's free. Moving toward the woman, going to his knees, resting the tip of his wand between her bare breasts. He can bring them back to life. He can save them, mother and child. He can save them both. He can... "No, Draco, you can't." "I can," says Draco, reaching out to place a hand on the woman's neck. She feels like she is made of wax, not living in the deepest kind of way. "It's so easy," he whispers. "Hardly costs a thing." "You can't, Draco. People can't be brought back from the dead." "He can," says Blaze. Draco shudders, takes a breath, and begins to cast. His stomach roils. "It's old dark magic," Blaze tells Harry, "sucks the life from everything around it and forces all that life into the corpse." "Draco, stop." Green light starts to thread its way through the woman's body. "Draco, I said stop." It weaves and sinks, then goes deeper into the floor and reaches out to the strongest points of life around him, pulling Expelliarmus. Draco's wand flies from his hand. He gapes at it for a moment, then turns around snarling, attacks the man holding his wand. "Motherfucker, give it—" "Stupefy." Draco feels his body freeze mid-air, go limp. "No!" an unfamiliar voice screams behind him. "Let him go! Let him fix them!" And the world goes black.